Chapter 85. An anniversary occasion, the estimable Twemlow, dressing himself in his lodgings over the stable yard in Duke Street, St. James, and hearing the horses at their toilet below, finds himself on the whole in a disadvantageous position as compared with the noble animals at livery. For whereas, on the one hand, he has no attendant to slap him soundingly, and require him in gruff accents to come up and come over, still, on the other hand, he has no attendant at all, and the mild gentleman's finger joints, and other joints working rustily in the morning, he could deem it agreeable, even to be tied up by the countenance at his chamber door, so he were there skillfully rubbed down, and slushed and sluiced and polished and clothed, while himself taking merely a passive part in these trying transactions. How the fascinating Tippins gets on when arraying herself for the bewilderment of the senses of men, is known only to the Graces and her maid. But perhaps even that engaging creature, though not reduced to the self-dependence of Twemlow, could dispense with a good deal of the trouble attendant on the daily restoration of her charms, seeing that as to her face and neck this adorable divinity is, as it were, a diurnal species of lobster throwing off a shell every forenoon, and needing to keep in a retired spot until the new crust hardens. Obeat, Twemlow doth at length invest himself with collar, and cravat and wristbands to his knuckles, and goeth forth to breakfast. And to breakfast with whom, but his near neighbors, the Lammels of Sackville Street, who have imparted to him that he will meet his distant kinsman, Mr. Fledgely. The awful Snigsworth might taboo and prohibit Fledgely, but the peaceable Twemlow reasons, if he is my kinsman I didn't make him so, and to meet a man is not to know him. Apostrophe, it is the first anniversary of the happy marriage of Mr. and Mrs. Lammel, and the celebration is a breakfast, because a dinner on the desired scale of sumptuosity cannot be achieved within less limits than those of the non-existent palatial residence of which so many people are madly envious. So, Twemlow trips with not a little stiffness across Piccadilly, sensible of having once been more upright in figure, and less in danger of being knocked down by swift vehicles. To be sure, that was in the days when he hoped for leave from the dread Snigsworth to do something, or be something, in life, and before that magnificent Tartar issued the ukase, as he will never distinguish himself, he must be a poor gentleman pensioner of mine, and let him hereby consider himself pensioned. Apostrophe, ah, my Twemlow. Say, little feeble gray personage, what thoughts are in thy breast today, of the fancy so still, to call her who bruised thy heart when it was green, and thy head brown, and whether it be better or worse, more painful or less, to believe in the fancy to this hour, than to know her for a greedy armor-plated crocodile, with no more capacity of imagining the delicate, unsensitive and tender spot behind thy waistcoat, than of going straight at it with a knitting needle. Say likewise, my Twemlow, whether it be the happier lot, to be a poor relation of the great, or to stand in the wintry slush giving the hack horses, to drink out of the shallow tub at the coach stand, into which thou hast so nearly set thy uncertain foot. Twemlow says nothing, and goes on. As he approaches the Lammel's door, drives up a little one-horse carriage, containing Tippins the Divine. Tippins, letting down the window, playfully extols the vigilance of her cavalier in being in waiting there to hand her out. Twemlow hands her out with as much polite gravity as if she were anything real, and they proceed upstairs. Tippins all abroad about the legs, and seeking to express that those unsteady articles are only skipping in their native buoyancy. And dear Mrs. Lammel and dear Mr. Lammel, how do you do, and when are you going down to what's-its-name-place guy, Earl of Warwick, you know what is it? Duncow to claim the flitch of bacon? And Mortimer, whose name is forever blotted out from my list of lovers, by reason first of fickleness, and then of base desertion, how do you do, wretch? And Mr. Rayburn, you hear? What can you come for, because we are all very sure beforehand, that you are not going to talk. And Veneering, MP, how are things going on down at the house? And when will you turn out those terrible people for us? And Mrs. Veneering, my dear, can it positively be true that you go down to that stifling place night after night to hear those men prose? Talking of which, Veneering, why don't you prose, for you haven't opened your lips there yet, and we are dying to hear what you have got to say to us. Miss Podsnap, charmed to see you. Pa, here? No. Ma, neither? Oh. Mr. Boots. Delighted. Mr. Brewer. This is a gathering of the clans. Dust hip pins, and surveys Fledgeby and outsiders through golden glass, murmuring as she turns about and about, in her innocent giddy way, anybody else I know? No, I think not. Nobody there. Nobody there. Nobody anywhere. Mr. Lammel, all a glitter, produces his friend Fledgeby, as dying for the honor of presentation to Lady Tippins. Fledgeby presented, has the air of going to say something, has the air of going to say nothing, has an air successively of meditation, of resignation, and of desolation, backs on Brewer, makes the tour of Boots, and fades into the extreme background, feeling for his whisker, as if it might have turned up, since he was there 5 minutes ago. But Lammel has him out again, before he has, so much as completely ascertained the bareness of the land. He would seem to be in a bad way, Fledgeby, for Lammel represents him as dying again. He is dying now, of want of presentation to Twemlow. Twemlow offers his hand. Glad to see him. Your mother, sir, was a connection of mine. Apostrophe, I believe so, apostrophe says Fledgeby, but my mother and her family were too. Apostrophe, are you staying in town? Apostrophe asks Twemlow. I always am, apostrophe says Fledgeby. You like town, apostrophe says Twemlow. But is felt flat by Fledgeby's taking it quite ill, and replying, no, he don't like town. Lammel tries to break the force of the fall by remarking that some people do not like town. Fledgeby retorting that he never heard of any such case but his own, Twemlow goes down again heavily. There is nothing new this morning, I suppose? Apostrophe says Twemlow, returning to the mark with great spirit. Fledgeby has not heard of anything. No, there's not a word of news, apostrophe says Lammel. Not a particle, apostrophe adds Boots. Not an atom, apostrophe chimes in Brewer. Somehow the execution of this little concerted piece appears to raise the general spirits, as with a sense of duty done, and sets the company a-going. Everybody seems more equal than before, to the calamity of being in the society of everybody else. Even Eugene standing in a window, moodily swinging the tassel of a blind, gives it a smarter jerk now, as if he found himself in better case. Breakfast announced. Everything on table showy and gaudy, but with a self-assertingly temporary and nomadic air on the decorations, as boasting that they will be much more showy and gaudy in the palatial residence. Mr. Lammel's own particular servant behind his chair, the analytical behind Veneering's chair, instances in point that such servants fall into two classes. One mistrusting the master's acquaintances, and the other mistrusting the master. Mr. Lammel's servant, of the second class, appearing to be lost in wonder and low spirits, because the police are so long in coming to take his master up on some charge of the first magnitude. Veneering, M.P., on the right of Mrs. Lammel, Twemlow on her left, Mrs. Veneering, W.M., P., wife of Member of Parliament, and Lady Tippins on Mr. Lammel's right and left. But be sure that well within the fascination of Mr. Lammel's eye and smile sits little Georgina. And be sure that close to little Georgina, also under inspection by the same dangerous gentleman, sits Fledgeby. Oftener than twice or thrice, while breakfast is in progress, Mr. Twemlow gives a little sudden turn towards Mrs. Lammel, and then says to her, I beg your pardon. Apostrophe this not being Twemlow's usual way, why is it his way today? Why, the truth is, Twemlow repeatedly labors under the impression that Mrs. Lammel is going to speak to him, and Turning finds that it is not so, and mostly that she has her eyes upon Veneering. Strange that this impression so abides by Twemlow after being corrected, yet so it is. Lady Tippins partaking plentifully of the fruits of the earth, including grape juice in the category, becomes livelier, and applies herself to elicit sparks from Mortimer Lightwood. It is always understood among the initiated that that faithless lover must be planted at table opposite to Lady Tippins, who will then strike conversational fire out of him. In a pause of mastication and deglutition, Lady Tippins, contemplating Mortimer, recalls that it was at our dear Veneering's, and in the presence of a party who are surely all here, that he told them his story of the man from somewhere, which afterwards became so horribly interesting and vulgarly popular. Yes, Lady Tippins, apostrophe assents Mortimer, as they say on the stage, even so. Then we expect you, apostrophe retorts the charmer, to sustain your reputation, and tell us something else. Apostrophe, Lady Tippins, I exhausted myself for life that day, and there is nothing more to be got out of me. Apostrophe, Mortimer parries thus, with a sense upon him that elsewhere it is Eugene, and not he who is the jester, and that in these circles, where Eugene persists in being speechless, he, Mortimer, is but the double of the friend on whom he has founded himself. But, apostrophe quoth the fascinating Tippins, I am resolved on getting something more out of you. Traitor! What is this I hear about another disappearance? Apostrophe apostrophe, as it is you who have heard it, apostrophe returns Lightwood, perhaps he will tell us. Apostrophe, monster, away! Apostrophe apostrophe retorts Lady Tippins. Your own golden dustman referred me to you. Apostrophe, Mr. Lammel, striking in here, proclaims aloud that there is a sequel to the story of the man from somewhere. Silence ensues upon the proclamation. I assure you, apostrophe says Lightwood, glancing round the table, I have nothing to tell. Apostrophe but Eugene adding in a low voice, there, tell it, tell it. Apostrophe apostrophe he corrects himself with the addition, nothing worth mentioning. Apostrophe, Boots and Brewer immediately perceive that it is immensely worth mentioning, and become politely clamorous. Veneering is also visited by a perception to the same effect. But it is understood that his attention is now rather used up, and difficult to hold, that being the tone of the House of Commons. Pray don't be at the trouble of composing yourselves to listen, apostrophe says Mortimer Lightwood, because I shall have finished long before you have fallen into comfortable attitudes. It's like apostrophe, it's like, apostrophe impatiently interrupts Eugene, the children's narrative. I'll tell you a story of Jack A. Mannery, and now my story's begun. I'll tell you another of Jack and his brother, and now my story is done. Get on, and get it over. Apostrophe apostrophe, Eugene says this with a sound of vexation in his voice, leaning back in his chair and looking balefully at Lady Tippins, who nods to him as her dear bear, and playfully insinuates that she, a self-evident proposition, is beauty, and he beast. The reference, apostrophe precedes Mortimer, which I suppose to be made by my honorable and fair enslaver opposite, is to the following circumstance. Very lately, the young woman, Lizzie Hexham, daughter of the late Jesse Hexham, otherwise Gaffer, who will be remembered to have found the body of the man from somewhere, mysteriously received, she knew not from whom, an explicit retraction of the charges made against her father, by another waterside character of the name of Riderhood. Nobody believed them, because little rogue Riderhood I am tempted into the paraphrase, by remembering the charming wolf who would have rendered society a great service, if he had devoured Mr. Riderhood's father and mother in their infancy had previously played fast and loose with the said charges, and, in fact, abandoned them. However, the retraction I have mentioned, found its way into Lizzie Hexam's hands, with a general flavor on it of having been favored by some anonymous messenger in the dark cloak and slouched hat, and was by her forwarded, in her father's vindication, to Mr. Boffin, my client. You will excuse the phraseology of the shop, but as I never had another client, and in all likelihood never shall have, I am rather proud of him as a natural curiosity probably unique. Apostrophe, although as easy as usual on the surface, Lightwood is not quite as easy as usual below it. With an air of not minding Eugene at all, he feels that the subject is not altogether a safe one in that connection. The natural curiosity which forms the sole ornament of my professional museum, apostrophe he resumes, hereupon desires his secretary an individual of the hermit crab or oyster species, and whose name, I think, is Chokesmith but it doesn't in the least matter say artichoke, to put himself in communication with Lizzie Hexam. Artichoke professes his readiness so to do, endeavors to do so, but fails. Apostrophe, why fails? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asks Boots. How fails? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asks Brewer. Pardon me, apostrophe, returns Lightwood. I must postpone the reply for one moment, or we shall have an anticlimax. Artichoke failing signally, my client refers the task to me. His purpose being to advance the interests of the object of his search. I proceed to put myself in communication with her. I even happen to possess some special means, apostrophe with a glance at Eugene, of putting myself in communication with her. But I fail to, because she has vanished. Apostrophe, vanished. Apostrophe, apostrophe is the general echo. Disappeared, apostrophe says Mortimer. Nobody knows how, nobody knows when, nobody knows where. And so ends the story to which my honorable and fair enslaver opposite referred. Apostrophe, Tippins, with a bewitching little scream, opines that we shall every one of us be murdered in our beds. Eugene eyes her, as if some of us would be enough for him. Mrs. Veneering, W. M. P., remarks that these social mysteries make one afraid of leaving baby. Veneering, M.P., wishes to be informed with something of a second-hand air of seeing the right honorable gentleman at the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.